The second annual Brew You is on tap at, for which sounds vaguely insulting, which I just like on top of everything else. Brew You is on tap for Saturday, October 7th at the Egg in the Student Commons at the CIA's Hyde Park, New York campus. Brew You is an exciting beer festival that will combine sampling from top breweries, including the brewery at the CIA, with delicious food from the CIA and fun educational seminars for beer and culinary enthusiasts. Yes, you do it for the education. You have the chance to tour the CIA brewery, learn about the college's Art and Science of Brewing course, and meet CIA head brewer Hutch Kugeman and other New York State brewers and beer experts, all while sampling beers and ciders and delicious dishes perfectly paired with beer and prepared by the CIA chefs. Hutch joins us, along with CIA Professor of Hospitality and Service Management and our good friend, John Fisher. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for being
morning.
Here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And is stipulated in both of our contracts, whenever there is alcohol on the table, Ray Graff and I appear together.
That's right. Happy to be here.
It's good to have WAMC's Ray Graff with us. This is his, he'll be doing Vox Pop today at 2 o'clock. This is his pre-show tradition.
It makes for a better later show, right?
Absolutely.
Well, good morning. It's nice to have you here. This is the second annual, which, thank me for this. This is Captain Obvious here. That means to me that Brew You number one went well.
It did. Good enough that letting us do it again, at least.
There you go. Yeah. So what does it do?
So it's kind of a, honestly, it's a combination of all the things CIA does well. So we've got some great beer along with the great Hudson Valley breweries. We've got educational seminars going on, food stations, food demos by CIA professors and chefs. So basically you come in, one price gets you in the building, and you can do whatever you want. Try some beers, sit in some classes, watch some food demos going on, try some great food. So it's kind of a fun day.
Now, we often think of wine and cheese, but John, you have already given us cheeses with two different beers, and are these paired or
yeah?
Okay.
The other thing is that's the seminar I'm going to be teaching is the beer and cheese pairing, and everybody always thinks, as you said, wine and cheese. Oh, we have some wine. Yeah, let's have some cheese. Oh, we have some cheese. Let's have some wine.
also,
sometimes.
Good, but go ahead.
The thing is that wine and cheese actually really often does not work, and everybody always thinks, oh, red wine. We have some red wine. Of course, let's get some cheese. No, there are not that many great pairings for red wine, cheese-wise. One of the only ones that's kind of a guarantee is Parmigiano-Reggiano is good with red wine. Usually white wine's better than red wine with cheese, but beer is always better with cheese than wine.
This is breaking news.
Just like the stirring and shaking of martinis.
Exactly. And that's another show.
That's but the beer in general is a more gregarious partner with food than wine. Wine can be a little prickly because beer basically says to you, hey, let's go eat. And wine looks at you and says, what exactly are you thinking of? You know, wine is pickier as a beverage than beer. Beer wants to have fun.
John spends a lot of time speaking to alcohol, by the way.
I was going to say, how long have you been drinking when the wine starts to talk to you?
Oh, John, it's time for some more wine.
Well, partly, John, right, because beer has a broader flavor profile.
Yeah.
So there are more possible flavors in beer than you can necessarily have in wine.
All right, so Hutch, tell us what you tell us about the beer, and then John can tell us about the cheese
as we
pair these together.
Okay. So I brought two of our beers that are seasonal beers. So
okay.
They're new. First being Oktoberfest Lager. Nice, malty, medium-bodied, 5.5% alcohol.
The darker of the two on the table.
The
cheers.
Yep.
Cheers. 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 Thank you. Very nice to you.
A lot of malt flavors in this beer. So you get a lot of toastiness, light caramel, roastiness. But then because it's a lager, you're going to get that clean, crisp finish.
And surprisingly fine bubbles.
Yes.
It doesn't overpower you with the carbonation.
Bubbles.
Tiny bubbles.
In your beer.
It's very good,
though. And so you get a lot of nuttiness and a lot of caramel in particular from this type of beer. And obviously, Oktoberfest beer is really classic for fall. So we don't get to do a lot of lagers down at the CIA. But
point of information, Oktoberfest is on now. Oktoberfest starts in September.
Yes.
That's true. Now, here's two little things that I've noticed in my recent beer drinking. One is that there are a lot of really crummy Oktoberfests out there. And
two,
one of the reasons that there are a lot of really crummy Oktoberfests is that it often merges with, hold your breath, pumpkin ale. Okay.
I don't know about that.
Well, I'm not saying it always does.
They're not dissimilar.
No, no, but now, so this is all a way of complimenting you on what a great beer this is, because it isn't heavy.
Right.
It has a great crispness to it.
I find a lot of commercial Oktoberfest to be very sweet.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Almost cloyingly slow. So, and because the idea is that it's a malty beer, and like a lot of malty lagers, they're going to have some sweetness from the malts in there, from the grains in there. But to me, Oktoberfest should be clean and crisp in the finish. So you get that sweetness up front, but you want to clean it up with a nice crisp finish.
The beer. What I like best is the freshness. In other words, two of my favorite Oktoberfests, Hackershore and Spaten, every year it's different to me. And I've decided it's because they're in green bottles and they come a long way.
And something to that. Some years make them skunky.
Some years they're better, some years they're not, but this is very fresh.
Spaten is.
And one of the great things about the craft beer industry is we have all this tremendous growth. There's all these choices in the marketplace, all these great new beers out there, in addition to the classics like you were mentioning. But it does mean that sometimes beer sits around for a little while.
Yeah.
So I've gotten the habit of, I don't buy anything unless I know how old it is. If there's not some sort of date code on there, unless I'm at a location where I know they're turning the beer over quickly.
Or unless he made it himself.
Or unless I made it myself and it's free, which is the most important thing to me.
So let me ask the question this way. So if you have something on tap, when do you start to get concerned that it's been on there for too long?
Usually 90 days is a pretty good thing. Now, our beer never sits around that long.
No,
we have thirsty students. But and I would say most draft beer doesn't sit around. If you're at a good craft beer bar that has even as many as 20 or 25 taps, they're moving stuff quick enough. I tend to have more problems in the store when you got bottled product sitting on a shelf. If it's a small...
In the light, bright light.
Yeah, and you were right about the green bottles. Green bottles don't block ultraviolet light really well. And so what you get is a chemical change in the hop compounds when they strip ultraviolet light, and it actually smells like a skunk.
Sure. It's called
MBT skunky beer.
Is the chemical.
Now, a lot of the big commercial breweries no longer use those type of hops. They actually use some modified hops that don't interact with ultraviolet light. So Heineken was famous for that for years, but that no longer is a problem for them because they're using hops that won't interact with UV light like that.
So while I still have some Oktoberfest left, which cheese should we eat here?
The more yellowish one.
Okay.
That's I think I probably brought it up when I did that cheese show a couple of years ago. This is called Pleasant Ridge Reserve.
We remember that.
it's from Wisconsin, and it's modeled on a French mountain cheese called Beaufort, as in the wind scale.
Now, which is proper? Should I try the cheese and then the beer?
Or do whatever you want.
No, but you're the expert here. For me to get the best bang.
Just eat it or drink it. You know,
shut up and do one of the two. Okay, got it.
And be happy. You know, enjoy it.
Now, do they make cheese at the CIA?
We don't. There are some really good creameries in the area, though. Colin McGrath, who used to be at Sprout Creek Farm as a former student, and he's started McGrath Cheese Company, and he's making some great cheeses now. The second cheese we're going to have is relatively local. But this one is Wisconsin, but it has been named the best cheese in the country a number of times.
Huh.
It's won that award at the National Cheese competitions. And it's got that...
What do you believe gives it that distinction of making it the best cheese?
It's frigging good.
Okay, well, nice. There you go.
That's a technical term too, right?
Yeah. No, but the public radio audience really loves that, by the way.
But it's the richness, the balance, it's a really lovely couple that run Upland Farm. And,
oh, those two are great.
Very nice.
And,
and because it has that kind of butterscotchy caramel character, that's why it goes with those same characteristics in the beer.
Wow, that's really good.
And, I mean, the cheese alone. One time I had never had it, and I went to a famous cheese store in New York City. And I asked her, the young lady, if she had Pleasant Ridge Reserve. And she said, of course. And while she's going to cut the piece for me, I said, you know, no, I've never had it. And she looked at me like I had killed her puppy.
Yeah.
and she
Which
said, well,
clearly you hadn't done.
I had not.
Right. Okay.
I had not.
Just to know that is great, yeah.
So she gave me a little taste of it and watched me intently for my reaction. And my eyes did roll back in my head a little bit, but yeah.
Okay, well, just a reminder, we are talking about Brew You, which is coming up on Saturday, October 7th at the Egg in the Student Commons at the CIA's Hyde Park, New York campus. Don't show up at the Egg in Albany. Different place.
Okay.
Corporate Egg.
Yeah.
It's a little confusing, though, right?
It's the CIA Egg.
Our food's better.
It's the Hyde Park Egg. And it's the second annual Brew You. It's on tap Saturday, October 7th.
And Brew University.
Brew University.
Basically is what it stands for.
Brew University.
And how is that going? I mean... Are the students happy and everybody's happy?
We teach them a beer class.
Yeah, it's okay. A pretty popular class.
But, I mean, there is some science behind this. It's probably not as easy as the kids originally.
Some of them were surprised by the amount of science. Yeah. You know, I just started getting into the basic chemistry in the last class, and I did see some blank faces.
Yeah, which you're used to because you've been on the show.
Yeah.
The fun thing is when John has to teach them about, you know, something like water, which sounds really simple and is incredibly dense and complex. And
my book on brewing water?
Numbing.
It hurts my brain. Yeah. It burns. That book burns my fingers.
There is a book on brewing water.
There are many.
Many books.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. You would think it's very simple, but it's not.
Well, okay. Let me put it this way. The reason that Bass Ale came from Burton-upon-Trent and Guinness comes from Dublin is because of the water.
Yeah.
Because Burton, there's actually in brewing, there's something called Burtonization, where you add minerals to the water to make hard water,
right. Which
is better for an amber, slightly bitter ale. Whereas the water in Dublin is very soft, which is better for dark beers. Mm-hmm. Because the malt you use to make dark beers, the malt itself is more acidic. So,
who knew?
Now, the next beer
is? This is our one of our class project beers. So the class John and I teach called Art and Science of Brewing.
So much better than my class project. Yes, go ahead.
Every student group gets a chance to create a brand new beer with me.
Okay.
So we give them 5 beer styles to research. It's actually something they get graded on. And they have to present, do oral presentations on these 5 different beer styles in groups. So it'll be the history of the style, what the flavor profile should be like, what ingredients you would use to get that flavor profile.
They have to name it.
If there's a historic producer of this style of beer, like who that would be, like you mentioned, some historic Oktoberfest producers. And then we taste examples of all 5 styles, and they vote on which one of the 5 they want to make.
Now, what are the 5 styles?
It changes
every
semester.
How many
styles are there?
Of beer?
Yeah.
In competition right now, the GABF, which is Great American Beer Festival, and the World Beer Cup are the 2 biggest competitions. Probably somewhere around 90.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
But some of those are variations on the style. So, for instance, like...
How many IPAs are there?
It's not fair to say judge a barrel-aged dark beer versus a barrel-aged light beer. Like you put those at the table, they should have different flavor profiles. So you get some different styles like that. Mm. Then there's classic things like Oktoberfest, IPA, English pale. You shouldn't put an English pale up against an American pale ale. It's totally different hop profile.
Okay, so which one is this?
This is a Saison.
Okay.
This is called Stay Sharp Saison. DuPont, very famous Saison producer from Belgium, if anyone's ever had that before. This one we kind of took a little bit of a different turn with. We used some New World hops. So Citra, which is a very famous now American hop with a lot of citrus character.
Yeah.
And then Galaxy, which is an Australian hop. These are things you would normally get in an IPA. But instead we put them into the Saison, which normally would be a lot more, would have very, I wouldn't say little hop character, but the hops would be very European. So they're very herbal.
Yeah.
These are like citrusy. And you mentioned before you got that sort of dank aroma coming out of there.
You tried this already?
A little funky.
I might have tried it prior to the segment.
That's the hop.
You wanted to make sure that you weren't.
It's
being
delicious
poisoned.
Though, and it grows on you. It strikes me as a good breakfast beer.
Yeah, this would be great with an omelet.
They're all good breakfast.
It really
beers.
Would.
Now, what did the student get? What was the grade? Did they get an A?
Well,
I try not to give A's.
This beer actually.
Why don't I like a drink a C minus beer here? This is good.
They actually deserve an A because this beer, we just had our first major competition in New York State. It was part of the state fair sponsored by the governor called the New York Craft Brewers Competition.
Yes.
And this actually took a silver medal at that competition. So
it's a great beer.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I love Saison.
Yeah.
The yeast we use for this is very expressive. So a lot of the flavor that you're getting besides that hop aroma is from the yeast, fermentation flavors. And this yeast is particularly expressive. Like, it could really dominate the beer. So to do something different with it was kind of fun.
And to Ray's point before about the freshness, by God, you can taste the freshness.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's so good.
Yeah. By the way, I jumped the gun and tried the other cheese with this.
What?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
You know, I'm just the guest.
I know.
The cheese is delightful.
Okay, so what cheese am I
Okay, so this is Kunik. This is the...
Kunik?
The Kunik, K-U-N-I-K.
Okay.
From Nettle Meadow Farm, which is in... Is it Warrensville or Warrensburg?
I think Warrensville.
Warrensville, just north of here. And it is cheese most likely to make your eyes roll back in your head. It's just... This is the favorite cheese on the campus at Culinary Institute. All the cheese people... on campus, this is our favorite cheese, and
it's soft
goat cheese with cow's cream. So it's a triple cream cheese.
Oh man!
But it has that slight tanginess of goat's milk, This goat's milk is the highest in acid of the three popular milks for cheese making, which is why it's always tangy. Now, that tanginess is what offsets the just incredible richness of it. And so it keeps it balanced, just like, you know, Hutch is talking about the balance of a beer with having, you know, the hops keeping staying in balance with the malt. The slight tanginess keeps it from being oppressively rich.
And then the pairing of the two brings out the character.
Which is perfect.
It is perfect.
And how do you do that?
I don't know.
This is kind of a cool
dark, dark magic.
This one kind of comes cool when you talk about not just the flavors, but the textures, right? That cheese is so creamy and rich. And this beer, very light-bodied. And honestly, we poured it out of a growler, so it's lost a little of its carbonation. Normally, very carbonated.
Yeah.
Not quite the level of champagne, but almost effervescent. So you get that crispness cutting through the creaminess of the cheese, and the texture really accentuates each other, not just the flavors.
Yep, I've been doing this 30 years, Ray.
Yeah. But, I mean, is there a standard orthodoxy for pairing the two?
Yeah. Some of the rules would be body with body. So a lighter cheese with a lighter bodied beer.
Yeah.
I learned that when I was like 13. Go ahead.
Cut it out.
It has been a rough morning.
Yeah, really.
Also, something you can bridge flavors like I did with the Pleasant Ridge and the Oktoberfest.
What do you
mean,
bridge?
With caramel.
Oh, okay.
So like complementary flavors rather than contrasting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The confusing part is that you can either contrast or complement, and they both work, but in different ways.
What is your best beer for pizza? Your Instagram feed features your Friday pizza, and they always look amazing. What is the best beer to have with a pizza?
The one that's in my hand.
Okay.
What's on the pizza?
Okay, but what, okay. How do you plant?
Right.
All right, so here's a question. How do you plant it? Do you plant it via the beer and create the pizza for the beer that you have, or do you...
I usually think about the food first.
Okay.
Because I have more than one beer in the fridge, so
right.
Usually I'll... And more than wine in the basement. So usually I just make what's... You know, food-wise, what I'm going to be making, and then I pick the beverage to go with it.
Don't you always feel like a loser, Ray, when you look at the like you're sitting there just with like nachos on your lap, sitting on the sofa, and then John posts this thing.
Oh, the pizza!
If I have
crazy
nachos in my lap, I do not feel like a loser. Just want to tell you that right now.
So the beer to go with lap nachos would probably
oh boy,
again back to 13.
Hilarious
yes,
jokes.
And
here.
It's definitely available at the gas station. Yes. The beer for lap nachos would be a gas station. Beer.
Yes. Now, is this the same beer we had, or were you just nicely refilling
my
glass?
I was just nicely refilling.
Oh, okay, great.
We do have a couple other beers if you want to try them, or we can just leave them behind for you guys later. It's up to you. We have an IPA and a wit beer as well.
Oh, let's try the wit beer.
All right.
All right.
Wit beer is tasty.
This is also a beer that John has paired with the Kunick cheese successfully.
That's
now,
another
not
great
only,
one for the Kunick.
Let me just plug the festival here, but the Brew You takes place on October 7th. Interestingly, obviously not just cheese that you'll be pairing. You also have the chefs from the CAA will be doing wonderful.
The food stations are going to be inspired by our students' pop-up restaurant that's in the egg also. Every semester there's a different – we have a program called Intrapreneurship, and the students have to pitch an idea and have it voted on by the powers that be, including the company that runs the
this
egg
This is
course.
The faculty?
Well, faculty judge it. Also, a number of different constituencies in the administration, they judge which concept is going to go in there because it's a real operating restaurant.
Right.
This semester, it's called Backyard Bird, and it's a chicken, fried chicken and roasted chicken concept. We've had a ramen concept. We've had a number of different things. So the previous concepts are going to be
the food stations will be incorporated into student ideas. So. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
There's going to be my beer and cheese seminar. There's going to be a seminar on beer history. There's going to be our friend Ann Becerra, who is Ann Likes Beer, on Instagram. She's coming up, and she's going to do a presentation on farmhouse beers. And
right.
I missed
so
one.
Actually, the beers we were talking about, the Saison we were talking about before, is a style of farmhouse. So Ann's going to take you through a guided tasting of three very different beers that would all really fit into that category. Mm.
Now I've had many farmhouse beers and they do taste vastly different. Mm-hmm. So is that sort of is a large umbrella term or is that?
It's a large umbrella term. That's a good way to put it. You know, a lot of these beer styles are our attempt to categorize things that existed before there were categories.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, the Trappist beers of Belgium, things like Chimay and Westmalle and West Vleteren, Orval, great beers that were made by monks. we've created categories to define their beers. They just made a beer.
Yeah.
So, right. Orval is the beer that that monastery makes. Here is our beer. This is the one. And we've tried to put it in a category. So some of that, things like farmhouse ales, it's probably a good example of beers that lacked definition that we as brewers and as...
So you can do that, which the monk can't. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they just... What they were
and
making
talk
predated.
And have sex, so there you go.
And they made the beer because of what the conditions were.
Right.
And that's...
And it's the yeast that lived in that environment. So right. Farmhouse ales would have been made on farms. They would have typically been low alcohol. Would have been fermented in the barns with whatever was living in the barn.
Yeah.
So they've things that it's a yeast that really is happy in warmer temperatures. This one's a little stronger.
Now, typical, this is the wit bread.
And then the wit beer, yes.
And it's cloudy.
Correct.
And tell us what makes a wit bread.
Oh, a wit beer.
Wit beer.
Wit beer.
Oh.
So the wit beer, this is called mise en place wit because we like our culinary puns at the CIA. They're Belgian wheat beers. Traditionally brewed with lots of wheat, which is what gives it the haze.
Okay.
As well as orange peel and coriander.
Oh.
So this gets some dried orange peel. Now, typically it would be what called bitter orange peel, which have a lot of bitterness to them, and that would have been used to give bitterness instead of hops. This actually, we use a lot of sweet orange peel, get a little bit more aromatic quality of it. But a lot of the spiciness in this beer is actually from the yeast itself. So it's a good example of fermentation flavors rather than malt or hop flavors.
Now, can you screw a beer up with like coriander? I mean, can that?
Sure.
Can that, yeah.
You know what you get when you have too much coriander? Hot dogs. When you put too much coriander in a beer, it tastes like hot dogs. I'm not even joking.
All right. I'll trust you on that.
Yeah. So we actually use an Indian coriander in this, which is really lemony. It's not doesn't smell like the coriander you necessarily get at the grocery store, which has a kind of an, it does have kind of an herbal.
Earthier
tea quality. This has a lot of lemon to it, which goes nicely with the orange peel and the fermentation flavors.
Now, see, I love this. I love wit beer. This is really good.
And Kienic this is really the good brunch beer.
I'm sorry?
This is the one
another piece
really
of
Kienic well
for it.
Yeah. With... this pairs great with a light salad, lighter fish, omelets.
Yeah.
It's a perfect brunch.
Another good brunch.
And usually low
beer.
Alcohol. It's usually about 4% alcohol. So you can have a couple of them. That's okay. Without tying one on at brunch.
Well, I mean,
Unless you want to.
Sitting here with the guy who said you could have at least 20 Aperol spritzes on my program. So.
That's the beginning of a story. I'm
our
sure.
legal department. Our legal department. Said,
let me tell you about the time we had 20
on
Aperol
the 20.
Your tolerance may vary. Well, let me tell you about Brew U. It is the second annual Brew University. It's on tap. Set on tap. Saturday, October 7th at the Egg in the Student Commons, the CIA's Hyde Park campus. You can find out more information by going to ciarestaurantgroup.com, and you will see a whole bunch of logos there, and one of them is for Brew U.
Go to the events page on ciarestaurantgroup.com, and you'll see a link to more information about Brew U and the ticket link. We do expect to sell out. We've already sold out the VIP, so we have general admission tickets left. But it will sell out. So if you're interested in coming, you definitely should come soon or get tickets soon.
That's what I like about this show, Ray, is that we don't even have to do the VIP thing. They just bring it to us.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
That's true. Very true.
We'll see if we let them leave with anything.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. It is always a pleasure. My God, the beer is amazing, and so is the cheese. And we thank you very much. We learned a lot. So
thank you
really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you very much.
Again, you can find out more information about Brew U by going to ciarestaurantgroup.com for more information. Our thanks to John Fisher and to Hutch Kugeman for being with us this morning, and we'll be back right after this.